This is Behind the Docs, the show that shines a spotlight on the people shaping how we understand and use technology. In each episode, we pull back the curtain to talk about what it's really like to create the docs we all rely on. Let's dive in. Welcome to Behind the Docs. Let's start with who you are and why you're here at LavaCon.
My name is Sandy Markle. I am the founder and CEO of Blueberry. I do content strategy consulting for food tech companies and content creators in food. I'm at LavaCon because it's a great place to see all the content disciplines in one place and hearing how people are using their discipline in really creative ways. And I really feel inspired to apply it to my own industry because there's not so many people represented in food tech here. And so I'm just so excited to just hear what everybody's doing in their own spaces.
Yeah, I was just about to say, what an exciting marriage of skill sets. I have not heard about content writing for the food space. So tell me a little bit about how that came about.
Well, I used to live in Shanghai for 9 years, and I was actually in the accounting field before I moved to Shanghai, and I started working for a food tech startup. And back then, if you weren't an engineer, you were in content. So I was the content team, and my role was very basic. I just had to work with the devs to add recipes to the platform. But as technology began to evolve, as new experiences and features started developing, my skill level also evolved. And so before, I thought, you know, I was just doing editorial and marketing, but then I started working on a lot more technical things. And I realized around 2020 that I was engineering content, not just managing it. And so that's when I discovered this wonderful space of people, content designers, content engineers. And I was really able to see myself in a lot of the things that they were doing. And so it was great because a lot of people, even in my own company, didn't know what I did. And they couldn't, like, do you do marketing? Like, no, I don't. So it was really great because I knew not only what I was called, but I could explain the things that I did for the first time because I was hearing those things that, oh, that's what I do. And so this is the first time I've been in person at LavaCon and just being in the rooms and meeting people that I follow on LinkedIn for the first time in person and just nerding out on all things content. So it's been really cool.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I've heard multiple people say that every session has its own little nugget. So what's the biggest nugget that you've got in your brain right now?
I went to a session yesterday by Leslie Carruthers about marketing and how they're using AI. And I really appreciate creatives being represented too, because there's been such a, because I work a lot with creators too, this visceral response to using AI in creative spaces. And so her approach to that was really interesting because it made it, you know, the way she talked about how she did it with her own team made it sound logical. You know, her approach was like making it a teammate and thinking about the partnership of AI and how, you know, we hear it over and over during these conferences that doesn't remove your creativity. And also things that I've like words that I've heard either at lunch or, you know, in the room, like chunking. Like, I don't know what chunking is. I need to look that up. I probably do it, but I don't know. See, that keeps happening where
you absolutely do.
Yeah,
it.
So I'm like Googling all day long. So that's good because I feel like I don't have a big team like I used to. So I feel like everyone in LavaCon is like the team, and we're learning from each other. So there's so many things like that are kind of in my head. I have to download. I've scribbled down in my notebook. I'm going to look at later.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're very energized by everything that's going on here.
Yeah.
We talk very often about, like, how do we get more people involved in this space? Because, you know, it's kind of niche. It's not something that is just readily available. It's not a standard
career that people know right. about and want to go into and that kind sure. of stuff. So if someone was listening to this podcast and they were interested or yeah. or had, you know, some kind of inkling that this might be something that they want to do, what advice would you have for them?
I did a recent post on LinkedIn and I started off is like I didn't know what a content engineer was, and then I realized I was one. And I think it's about validating and almost like looking up what you do. If you're in an organization where you're the only one doing what you do, or if it's hard for you to explain what you do to your family members, to your manager, it's probably good to look externally. But that's what I did. And that's what my manager at the time encouraged me to do, looking for, you know, following people on LinkedIn and thought leaders to see if that you can make sense of, you know, where you can kind of specialize and niche down and learn from. So, you know, Google was the gateway for a lot of the things that I was exposed to. There's so much thought leadership now that than there ever has been around content discipline. So yeah. that would be my suggestion. You know, just be curious. You know, if something doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right when people describe what you do. And I think there's a lot of people in content suffering from an identity crisis. Yep. And so I think that's more solvable now than ever before.
Yeah, very valid. Okay. Last question, which is the one I ask every single person who comes on Behind the Docs. And that is, if there was a hill that you were going to die on in your field or your industry, what would it be?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about that hill. And it's about content creators in food approaching their content as an asset. And knowing that if their content is structured, that it can actually exist any and everywhere. And I think of all of us in LavaCon here, we have that really at the top of our minds. But there's a lot of publishers that really don't understand that concept, and they're feeling really stressed out about this age of this new iteration of AI. So this is the hill that I'm on, my soapbox at the moment. I want creators to know that their content is valuable. It's an asset, and structure is what's going to make it exist forever.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much. I hope you have a really great rest of LavaCon, and I know that we will keep in touch and be talking again soon.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thanks, Andy. Welcome to Behind the Docs. We're reporting from LavaCon. Tell me who you are and why you're here.
Yeah, I'm Fabrice Lacroix. I'm the founder and CEO of Free Topics. We're a software vendor. We are partnering with Ereto. And we are taking care of content delivery. So we're just focusing on gathering all the product knowledge coming from the CCMS, but also maybe wikis and any other silos that you have in your company. And then we aggregate that, transform the content, unify the content, and you can feed any touch point with that content.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so tell me a little bit about, like, when you're here at LavaCon, what are you looking to get out of it? You know, other than being a vendor, you personally, what are things that you are trying to find?
Well, there are many different reasons we are here. As a vendor, we're meeting customers and prospects, that's for sure. But me personally, running the product and the development as well, I'm trying both to anticipate the needs of the people, where the market is heading to, what are the pains that people feel, to see how we can solve that into the product, but as well trying to educate, because what is pretty amazing, and I guess you've got the same feeling at Ereto, is like there are many things that our product do already and since many years, and that people don't even understand and they don't even know it exists. So that's interesting that sometimes we see people coming to our website and say, oh, I've heard about you. Can you tell me a bit about Free Topics? We show them and say, oh my God, that exists? No, we've been looking for that for years, and say, yeah, we've been there for years, by the way. So that's interesting to see the gap between the needs of the market and what us vendors provide and how we, in some way, fail at educating and advocating what we do and how transformative that can be.
Okay, so along that lines, what is something that you think most people are surprised Fluid Topics does that they don't know about?
Usually, it's first the capability to so easily create this unified repository by sort of pulling whatever they have as it is today. It's like, oh my God, I just have to push my whatever data markdown, my old wiki, my legacy word files, and it magically turned that into gold. And probably what's always surprising me is how those people struggle to sell those projects to their company. And once it's rolled out, how their top management comes back to them and say, oh my God, it's amazing what you did. Why didn't we do it earlier? And usually they say like, it has been 3 years, I'm asking for budget, you know? And really, I guess you experience that as well. It's like how management don't foresee the problem they have. And it's only when the problem is solved that they realize that there was an issue, there was a problem, and it could be solved in a way that has a real impact on the business, on the operations of the company. So it's always striking me how far we are from being able to convey this impact we have with content, especially to top management. I think we are here at Lavacon with the tech writing community. They understand the needs, the challenges, but in some way, us and them together fail at conveying that message to the higher management so that, and again, when it's deployed, I always see this top management sharing about the results. So, my God, right. Why wait?
It's like one of those, like the results speak for themselves, yeah. But it takes so much effort to get the results because there's like so much prep and so much tooling that you actually have to use. And then you have to ask for that. So if you could like try to synthesize for a technical writer, if they were going to their management and they wanted to start the process of centralizing all of their documentation and stuff like that, what are some of the things that you are seeing executives really understanding? Like, what's the thing that excites them that so that technical writers can start to think about those things?
Wow, that's a tough one. I would say that the management is not really consuming the content that those people are producing and managing every day. So because they are not consuming that content, they don't feel the pain that the customers have and the end users have at when they look for information and when they have to solve a problem. So if the management was sometime trying to say, let's behave as a customer, see if I can easily find information about how to solve that, how the support is reacting and testing all those processes of the company, they would realize how weak the knowledge part is inside their company. And usually what happens is that because they don't do it, they don't understand the problem, they don't see the problem. It's like, okay, we've got PDFs, it's good enough. Or we have a website with static HTML on it, it's good enough. It's not good enough. And usually they don't listen to the complaints of the customers. And it's usually when they switch to modern solutions that they got this very positive feedback from their own customers that say, oh, you changed that now, it's amazing what you did. Say, okay. So yeah, it's very difficult because they don't, you should force your management to consume this content and try to solve problems on their own. And then they would feel the pain that your end customers feel.
We should start a series that's like that. Have you ever seen the American show Undercover Boss? It's where like take like the CEO of a company. We should start a series of that and be like, solve your own technical problem.
Turn your CEO into a customer. Make him configure the product. Use the product. Solve a problem.
Exactly.
Reach out to customer support to see how customer support reacts to the tickets and the cases that happen. All of that should be tested as well.
But exactly.
I think it's not done. Yeah, it's not done.
We could call it Undercover Docs.
Undercover Docs. I love that. Undercover Docs.
So what are like some of the trends that you guys are seeing or that you're picking up on while you're here now? Is there anything that's sticking out to you?
AI, that's for sure. I mean, AI is everywhere in every talk. But again, it's like everybody talks about it. Very few understands where it's going. It's well known that most of the pilots are failing inside companies. I'm not sure people understand why it's failing, which is another subject.
Right.
And if people could understand why their projects are failing, maybe they would look at AI in another way. That's one. And probably as well, what is interesting in the discussion we have with our customers is the rise of MCP, Model Context Protocol, and how it's going to be transformative and the impact it has. And as well, that probably whatever project companies have done over the past 2 years, they can throw everything away and restart, because MCP is a hard restart when it comes to AI, and particularly as well how content can enable agents in acting and making decisions about how to do something.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge, it's going to trigger this agentic thing, and MCP being part of this, like the tool behind, the solution behind these agentic systems. It's going to be interesting, because I think it's going to make people realize how much content is necessary to drive those agents, because most of the decision and the thinking of the agents will be made based on those instructions, this knowledge that exists inside the company. The point is that the knowledge is, for the moment, most of that knowledge is implicit. It's inside people's brain.
Right.
And if you want your agent to behave as an employee, you have to dump the brain and the implicit knowledge of the company from people into content, so that that becomes available to the agents,
right,
so that they can make decision and understand the context of what they do.
Right, right.
And it's like there's a huge hole, gap, for building a valid agentic system, which is the knowledge that drives those agents to do the proper things.
Yeah.
I think that's very different from tech doc in some way. Tech doc is a sub-part of that knowledge,
yes,
that is already existing, but that's the part we write for humans, knowing that we write it for humans that have this implicit knowledge.
Right.
And that's even the don't write too much, like if we page is page one, minimalism and all that, like don't write too much, because people don't need that overload of information because they know the domain.
Right.
The problem is that the agent don't know the domain. So whatever you didn't write earlier on because that was the strategy not to write it, that becomes the opposite. Now you have to write it for the agent. So everything, though, the way we wrote content and we wrote documentation over the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years is not directly applicable for agentic system, because that's almost the opposite. We need to write more,
right,
for driving those agents. So that's, yeah, interesting, because that's a huge moment where people will realize that one of the key factors to the success of AI projects will be the content, and particularly the missing content.
Right, right. That's like, it reminds me of in American schools, we have, there's always, everyone does a lesson in elementary school that's like, write a procedure. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we do it, but we do. And so the procedure is to build a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And okay, then your teacher will take your procedure and do what you say, but they take it very literally and they show you all the things that you're implicitly assuming.
That's it.
In your procedures. So it's like, now we got to do that. We got to go back and fix that. So
that's exactly, that's, yeah, exactly it. And I think that will be a aha moment. Like, oh my God, we need to rethink the way we write our content.
Right.
And part of that content has to be written for agents, not just for humans.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think we're going to get like agentic style guides and
that's
things
it,
like that?
Yeah. Some content that you wouldn't show to humans has to be hidden,
right,
in some way, but made available to the agents only. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I love it. Okay, my last question that I always ask anyone who's on Behind the Docs, if there was a hill that you were going to die on when it comes to your industry or your company, uh-huh, whatever it is, what would it be?
Wow. I don't want to die. At first. I think that would be that one. That would be making people understand, making top management understand that there won't be any successful AI project without content. It's not an IT thing. It's not a technological thing, because all the vendors will have MCP enablement of their solutions. All the vendors, well, I mean, it's going to be about the content, not the technology. And if we get people to understand that, I mean,
we got a mission. Sounds like we got a mission.
We've got a mission.
Okay.
We got an issue.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful speaking to you.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you soon. Bye.
So, we're here at LavaCon.
Yep.
Welcome to Behind the Docs.
Thank you.
Will you start with who you are and what you're doing here at LavaCon?
My name is Sarah Feldman, and what I'm doing here at LavaCon, besides for the fact that I find an excuse to come here every year, no matter what, is twofold, threefold. My employer is the Consortium for Service Innovation, so I'm always representing them. We are a nonprofit think tank in pursuit of better customer engagement. We have a bunch of member companies that we get together, and they co-create operational models that are tool agnostic and field tested and constantly iterated over time. And because we're a nonprofit, the methodology, the documentation of the methodologies we publish for free, ungated via Creative Commons licensing. So lots of resources if you go to serviceinnovation.org. I was a presenter this year, and I also am helping this year to represent the newly forming Kinetic Council, a new professional association for information professionals. I'm still in the early growth building stages, kind of in discovery mode. We have our mission and vision, or drafts of them, but still kind of, so we know our what and who we are for, which I'll say more about that in a minute, but we're still figuring out the how. That's going to be really adapting to who starts to engage and what they need. And so who's they? It's really, if anyone's in and around LavaCon, it's going to be relevant to them. What's the big tent? You know, what's in common across all content strategy or content adjacent jobs in the enterprise, from content strategy to content design and semantics and analytics and, you know, all of the information architecture, knowledge management, anyone who's working with or for and around content and information.
Wow.
We want to be an association that is a resource for them.
Awesome. That's incredible. How long has that been underway?
That, as far as I know, it started at least before LavaCon last year, because that's when some of the founding members, Chris Saunders and Rahel Bailey, started to socialize the idea of it. And it's all volunteer run at this point. We are established as a nonprofit organization, so we are legit. And so it's been around because it's volunteer driven by people with day jobs. It's slow moving, but it's an exciting time to see where it's going to go and see how it can fill a void in the industry left by either associations who have unfortunately dissolved, like STC as an example, or other industry associations that are still going to be quite complementary, but they're a little bit more niched down. And we're wanting to look at, well, what's useful that could be relevant to a wider scope of folks in the content industry.
Yeah. What ended up like getting you involved with it?
I heard they had a CTA at LavaCon last year. 2024, was that last year?
Yeah.
Where they had a table and just a humble sign up sheet that said, we have the beginning of a vision, and if this is interesting to you, like, put your name on the sheet. And I did. And about 6 months ago now, Cruz reached out. I'd known him from years ago, and said, I saw your name on the sheet. Like, we think you could maybe help us move this thing along. So that's what I'm trying to do. Help out where I can with community building, facilitating some of our online meetups, and giving feedback on some of our founding documents, socializing the idea to people here this year. So,
yeah, I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, do the STC RIP, very sad, mm-hmm. like missing it. So yeah. I think that there's definitely a hunger for it.
Yes, definitely a void there. And we're definitely not hoping, we're not aiming rather to replicate what they did, but help fill the need left behind.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So we were actually just talking earlier about how you have very specifically avoided structured content.
Ooh, I didn't know you, that was, you were going to bring that back up.
Mm-hmm. We're getting into it. Why is that?
So I started my career as a technical writer. That was the first 10 or so years of my career. I've since moved not beyond it, but kind of away from it a little bit. Still keep a foot in the door. That's why I love coming to conferences like this. But now more focused on knowledge management and customer engagement. But back in my tech writing days, when I did know about structured authoring versus not? I mean, the main reason is that from a, like a working style perspective, I always was drawn to startups. And in my knowledge of structured content, Ditta specifically, startups tend to not be quite in the spot yet where the ROI is there for Ditta. So yeah. Part of it was just like a natural, I wasn't likely to work in an environment where it was needed. And maybe it was a little bit of me not knowing the future of my career at the time, but I like to color outside the lines a little bit. I like to adapt to what's happening cross-functionally, help connect dots cross-functionally, like build bridges between different teams. And none of that is anything that can't happen in an enterprise where Ditta is happening, but it was always easy to just say, well, it wasn't for me. I think it just wasn't for me. Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. It's not for everyone.
No.
You were a tech writer for a long time, mm-hmm. and now you're a knowledge management customer experience. Is that correct?
Yes.
So how did your time being a tech writer inform what you're doing now?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm biased obviously, but if you think about the skills like tech writer 101, these are skills that would be relevant to almost anyone working a job anywhere, right? I mean, I think it's, you know, people take what in most universities, like Psych 101 is a pretty common class. I think like Tech Writing 101 should be the equivalent because it's just basic, effective communication, but in a very sort of like practical and outcome-oriented approach, right? Audience analysis and prioritizing what the user needs and making sure that it's findable and usable by folks who need it. Really putting customers and users first and then molding the communication to meet what they need. I mean, doesn't that sound like what a skill set for any job?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm in marketing and you could tell me the exact same thing.
Right.
I could apply that very easily.
Totally.
It's like a horoscope.
Yes.
It connects to like whatever you want. Right. Whatever you want from it.
I love that. Right. If you describe the fundamentals, almost anyone could see themselves in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that.
Okay. So last question.
Okay.
I ask every single person who is on Behind the Docs this question. Mm-hmm. So no pressure. If there was a hill you were going to die on.
Oh my gosh.
In this industry or your function, what would it be?
Ooh. I have so many soapboxes, and usually it's sort of like in the context, but like which soapbox comes to mind the most? I think it's that, you know, this kind of goes back to what we just chatted about with like the fundamentals or are transferable. Most of us in our roles, cross-functionally, what we're trying to do is more similar than different. And I think in lots of industries, but definitely in the content industry, technical writing industry, you bring in content strategy, content design. There's been a lot of, in my opinion, not fruitful effort to go into trying to differentiate us versus them. This is what this role is. This is what that role is. This is what they do. This is what we do. This is how I'm different. Lots of focus on differentiation. And of course, we can't all be doing the same job in organizations. We need to complement each other, but it ends up being, to me, it appears like it's from more of a defensive standpoint as opposed to a practical standpoint.
Sure.
And I totally get where it comes from. I think like so many roles, it's coming from a point of, you know, it's defensive for a reason. We've had a hard time, content professionals, getting seen as valuable assets organizations. Tech writers have historically gone through, you know, first to get cut in layoffs. That's been happening for decades.
Yeah.
And content design, for example, I know has had a hard time getting recognized as just as valuable an organization as engineers, as developers, right? So everyone's coming from this place of I'm trying to explain their value, but I think it accidentally leads to people focusing more on comparing themselves against their peers rather than combining efforts. So
collaboration. Imagine what we could all do if we weren't constantly worried about justifying our existence at our businesses.
Right. And so what if you just didn't, or at least didn't do it in in spheres where you have the chance to collaborate rather than focus on what's different.
Absolutely. Yeah. Make yourself more valuable by collaborating with more teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. It was great talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for hosting.
Hey. Start with who you are.
Yes.
And why you're here at LavaCon.
I am Talia Sinotz. Most people call me Tally. I am a technical writer at Jack Henry & Associates, and I'm here simply to learn more about technical writing in the content space. Being a young professional in the space, I'm 23 years old, and I've been working as a technical writer for 4 years now, and the space has changed a lot even since I've joined, especially with AI. So I'm here to see what the industry is going towards, what the trends are, especially what all of these huge companies, big or small, are trying to do with AI and content strategy in general.
Yeah. So you're a very young new member to technical writing. How did you find it?
Well, I had what many people have, which is a mid-college crisis, where I was very much unsure of what I wanted to do. And the only thing I was good at was English. So,
and you didn't want to be a teacher?
I did not want to be a teacher. Maybe later on, but I don't think I have the temperament for it now. So I stumbled across a certification for technical writing, and I had no idea what it was, as 90% of people outside of the field and some people inside of the field still don't really know what it's about. And the rest is history. I got an internship at Jack Henry as an apprentice, and since then I've worked for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what has been the most exciting thing since you started to now?
Most exciting thing. The introduction of AI actually was, and it seems like a cop out, but a lot of our work can be redundant, and those redundant items actually take the most amount of time. So AI has saved us a lot of time. It allows us to imagine more for process changes and so on and so forth. And it essentially gives us more free time to figure out how to make our content better and save everybody time, especially our customers, whose time is the most valuable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So are you a lone writer or are you on a team?
I'm on a team. I'm a part of the ECS team at Jack Henry. My manager, Nicole Edens, is actually here. This is the first time I'm meeting her in person.
Oh.
Because I work virtually. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one. Have you been to LavaCon before?
I have not. This is my first time. And I'm getting a lot of ideas, so maybe I'll present at
Ooh,
some point.
Ooh, get it.
I don't know yet. This year has been a lot about AI, and next year I'm sure it won't change that much in that regard, but maybe I can inject something else into it as well.
What's one of the what's one of the ways that AI has changed your workflow the most?
So my team uses Jira to gather information from our subject matter experts for example, release notes. And often what we had to do is look at all this information that our SMEs provided us and create, you know, it was pages of information, create a one sentence phrase of this is what changed, this is what updated. And I developed a multi-shot prompt using AI to essentially just take all this information using our style guide and using previous examples of release notes we've written based on other content. And it essentially generated those release notes for me. And what would usually have taken me several days took me less than 2 hours.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question.
Yeah.
Everyone has told me that there's at least one nugget that they've walked away from at this conference.
Yes.
So what would you say your one nugget is?
Soft power.
Ooh, what's that? Tell me more.
So as a tech writer, very low on the totem pole for my company, I don't really have much influence in the way things go besides how I work. And even then I have to work within the frame that I'm put in. Actually my manager, as well as a senior tech writer I work with, Heather, Barbary Blades, discussed about how one can influence one's coworkers and make it so that you can work well with them, even if you don't have hard power, which is, for example, a title that gives you that power, that people have to listen to you. We were talking about HIPPO as well, or the people with the highest salary, having the, you know, their opinions listened to the most. So what I took away from is that you have to, given the lower you're on the totem pole, the greater the importance one needs to put on relationships. And if people like you, if they they understand you, if you're willing to understand them and meet them halfway, or even meet them more than halfway,
right?
They're more likely to work with you, and you can find new ways to work with them. So yeah, that's soft power.
That's great. Thank you so much. This is wonderful. Have a great rest of your conference.
Thank you.
All right. So let's start with who you are and why you're here at LavaCon.
Well, I'm Maring Eberlein. I am at LavaCon to volunteer. I work with Help Center support content. So that is why I wanted to come to a conference focused on content strategy.
Love it. Is this your first LavaCon?
It is. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I got to go to the first confab a few years ago, but it was also the first, well, my first confab, and then it was the last confab. So, and then I'd heard about LavaCon, I think around that time, and wasn't able to swing it last year, but luckily they have made space for volunteers like me where I got to come.
Amazing. So what's your experience been like so far?
It's been amazing. I mean, this community's always had amazing people in it. We love content people. Everyone's very welcoming and supportive and wants to hear what everyone else is doing. I mean, we're all just trying to figure stuff out. That's really what we do at the end of the day, right?
Right.
Writing is such a small part of it. But yeah, no, everyone's been awesome. It's been great to meet different people. There's certain people that I've known online for quite some time in some cases who I got to meet in person this week, which has been really cool. It's been an awesome experience. I'm so glad that I was able to come.
Yeah, me too. I mean, there's so many new faces this year. Like, it's really wonderful to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of new young faces too, which was really exciting. Cause we talk about it a lot. Like, what happens when all of the tech writers age out, you know, like there's no one on the up and up, but, so you work on Help Center content. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, what's your day to day? What's your focus?
Yeah, so I am a consultant, and my focus, when I say support content, it's kind of, I feel like it's its own space. I feel like I'm over here trying to make fetch happen with, like, support content. It's its own thing. But basically, I got into the content world because I was managing a support team and realizing pretty quickly that, oh, we can have content help with a lot of this. We're getting the same questions all the time, that sort of thing. So that's kind of how I got my start, was creating resources for that. But as I was leaving that role and kind of transitioning into doing some consulting by accident type of stuff, I was just trying to figure things out, right? Like everybody else, I was Googling, trying to find stuff. And I was realizing that when I was doing content for kind of general end users, where they're not necessarily a practitioner of a skill. I love stealing that definition of technical writing.
Yeah.
For an audience who is the practitioner of a skill, I'm kind of more focused on, it could be someone who might be a practitioner of a skill, but it's also for your English teacher who refuses to get a smartphone. People who are not necessarily going to be as tech savvy. And so how do you accommodate for both types of audiences? Someone who can definitely figure things out and someone who just really needs some hand holding. How do you create content that works for both of them? And so that has been something where I was kind of borrowing stuff from tech writing. I was learning about content strategy. I was learning about UX writing, learning about a little bit of marketing here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously using my support skills that I knew. I mean, I had already done lots of like email drafting and talking to customers and users and kind of understanding pain points and seeing that with clients too. So, now I'm just rambling, but
no, you're good. I edit all of these, so don't worry too much about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in thinking of this, you're consulting, you're talking to all these teams. I'm sure that there's a wide variety of the kinds of teams that you're talking to. When you approach a new team or project, what's like kind of your first step? What do you do first?
Sure. So I'm usually working specifically. So this is getting back into the thing of like, what is support content? Because I found Help Centers, you're usually finding a wide variety of people who work on it. That's why there's no consistency in Help Centers. I'm sure anyone who's tried to Google something and get content from the company has probably found some are really great, but not many.
Yep.
And I was finding that a lot of like technical writers are doing that work. Maybe marketing has started that work, and they're kind of, so it's coming from different perspectives, and support is another big, I think of it as like a pie chart with like a third of it is probably technical writers doing end user docs. A third of it is support teams, and a third of it is kind of like a mix of marketing and UX writers and things like that.
Yeah.
So I come from that support corner of stuff. So that's who I'm usually working with. I originally was subcontracting with a Zendesk partner who helped with implementation and optimization of Zendesk, and they were more into the technical stuff that can make their help center look nice, but they're like, we're not touching the content. So I came on board to help with that. And so a lot of times, honestly, the first thing that I do is I'm like, all right, I'm going to see if I can put myself in the user's shoes. I do a lot of B2C client work. So like I download their app and I start like kind of poking around and seeing how someone would use it. I like to look at the app reviews. I like digging around. I love doing Google Trends searches, kind of seeing like the analytic. It's been a minute because I've been on the course side and talking about it thing for a while. I haven't done as much client work in the last like year or so, but Answer the Public.
Oh,
I love that resource. And it's not as free as it used to be. Yeah. All the features and stuff. But I love doing that where I'll search the company name and be like, okay, what are, you know, the most common Google searches related to this organization's name? Sometimes it's about competitors, but a lot of times it's like where is it? What is it? I did a lot with EV charging most recently. And so it was a lot of like comparing different EV charging networks and, you know, how do I start a charge? They went public not long ago and there was nothing on their help center about how they had gone public, but a lot of searches on Google were about that. And it's like, okay, obviously we need something to address this.
Absolutely.
So kind of starting there, and also, I mean, again, support background. I love digging into support ticket data. If now support ticket data is going to vary also by the organization. I feel like content, something I wish people knew. Content and support people are so similar and they don't talk to each other very much. They do at some organizations, but it's honestly really rare and it blows my mind because both people who specialize in that work, their main focus is user experience and how do we make things better for the user. They're often considered a cost center. They're often brought into the conversation after, you know, toward the end, like basically they're launching the thing like, oh, by the way, what do you think? And you're like, if you wish you'd talk to me sooner and we could have maybe done this and that and saved everyone some time, but okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's, I love that I get to stay working within those worlds because when I transitioned into doing content work, I had signed up for a UX certification because I thought that was the way to go. And I'd done work with our product team. So I was like, well, this makes sense. And then I got pulled back into the consulting with the Zendesk partner. So it was really cool that I got to kind of stay in my support lane and use that expertise and experience, which I knew I would always use and call on.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there is an important factor of like your help center is one of the most visible assets of the organization. And there's no unification around it. Like the rocks I had to look under to find any helpful information.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's something like shameless plug for myself. Because, so I did my UX writing certification with UX Content Collective. I had left my job in end of 2021. And they had it was something that was affordable and it looked good. And it's a pretty cool certification process. And I felt like I needed that on my resume because I'd been applying and just kind of,
sure.
You know, it's you and one other person. So I was like, well, maybe having a resume line. So that was my way of doing that. I finished the certification, but I used a lot of it actually, but ended up pivoting and staying in the support kind of area and long form content. And then in 2023, UXCC was getting a lot of UX writers who had been certified, and they're being tasked with doing the content for these feature releases, and then they're also being tasked with creating the support content to go along with those features and things. And they had been reaching out to UXCC to be like, hey, like, do you have anything? Because this is, you know, we need to do this, and you helped us with can you help us with the support content? And so
right.
I think Patrick just thought they were going to do a workshop or something, and then we had a call, and I'm like, oh. Let me tell you all the problems with trying to do this work. I'm like, well, there's no consistent job titles. There's no consistent practice around anything. You have to cobble together this, that, and the other. I'm like basically just laying out all of the issues I had. I mean, my favorite example is like, I spent probably at least a year or so trying to figure out, do you open a link in a new tab or the same tab? And never knowing, like, obviously moving forward, but like in the back of my mind, like, I still don't have an answer. And then like, eventually I did find one. I like to... New URL, new tab. That's,
oh.
Or no, sorry, not URL. No, duh, they're all different URLs. New domain, new tab.
Got it.
So like if it's the same domain, same tab, because then you can keep your backlinking navigation. I follow, and I learned this from a forms guy, because I get emails from Adam Silver, does his whole thing is forms. And yes. I love it. And I love his newsletter. It's just like little snippets about forms. And he had that in there once. And I was like, finally, this makes sense.
A logical answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think he had said always do the same tab. But I'm like, I still like jumping because I know like if I'm on my phone, I want to like if I'm looking at something.
Whatever. Yeah, I don't want to lose my spot.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like same domain, same tab, just back, whatever.
Okay.
So if I'm still in the help center, I'm going to stay in the help center. But if it's something new, anyway, so.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. I'm sure everyone has their opinion. And I have a support content style guide template that I have for people. And that one's in there is like, this is what I do. But also just making style choices, just make a choice and stick with it. Now I'm just preaching to the choir. Sorry.
Well, that's actually
tangents.
A great segue to the question that I ask every single person who's on Behind the Docs. And that is, if there was a hill that you were going to die on in your field, what would it be?
Well, I've been on and off working on my little manifesto forever, but it's having support content as its own practice. The way that I see it, I hear a lot from the support community is often lumped in with knowledge management. And yes, it is knowledge management in some ways, knowledge for your user, sure. But ultimately, I think of knowledge management as internal. And I think support teams lean on it because support teams more than any other, like if you're going to have more than one agent answering tickets and things, you've got to have workflows, you've got to have stuff documented. And so they naturally fall into that. And they, I think, tend to take those, whatever. So technical writing for end users. Personally, I would never presume to say that I can do technical writing. I don't know if that sentence made sense. But I know that I'm not a technical writer. I don't know how to code. I don't plan on learning. And while it is true that technical writers can write for general end users, they do have the tendency to be much more technical and in the weeds, where like I know from a support space, sometimes people are just reaching out because they want someone to nicely confirm that they're doing the right thing. Like there is an element of touchy-feely, and that's where like some marketing skills come in, where we're thinking about, you know, I want my support content, because a lot of prospects look at support content, so you have to think about marketing, but also it's like we want to keep our current users feeling good about the product too. So it's like the tone stuff matters a lot more, where tech writing, I think it's much more focused on this is the purpose and we're going to get to the meat of the article. And obviously that's important, but like it, I think it is a different type of writing. UX writing is usually short form. Mm-hmm. When we were defining support content for the course, it was very much, it got a little in the weeds and I wish I could remember on the top of my head, but basically like it is content that helps a user complete a task and they have to like take an action to access that content. That was kind of the distinction. So to me, I'm like, you know, help text that's underneath or like in a form field or underneath the like line on the form, whatever that is. I'm like, that's definitely UX writing. I don't
want
to, you know, use some support content skills with it, but it is UX writing. But when it comes to a tooltip that someone had to like actually take an action to access that content, that's where I think that support content skill set starts to come more into, like more importantly into play, because honestly, if you're going to be creating a tooltip, go to the trouble anyway, it should be linking to an article. It's all about progressive disclosure and saying, okay, I have a little bit of information in the like on-screen UI text.
Yeah.
And then they access the tooltip. Now we need a little more. I don't think that support content people necessarily need to understand all of the requirements for a tooltip and the characters and all that. But I think like working with your UX writers, working with your UX designers and your support content people is really crucial there. It's like that teamwork. That's where it's like, it's, I think it could be its own practice and its own like title or whatever, but it's like thinking of it as a unique practice, I think is what's important, and how, right, all of us have like the T-shaped skill set, right? They say it's,
yep,
like you need to be superficial on things. So that's where I'm like, you know, I'm just tangenting so bad, but I'm thinking about, I like to think about how like the, if support content is its own practice, the help center is going to be the primary deliverable. Everyone kind of has their primary deliverable, but then you've got a lot of affiliated deliverables. So I consider,
yes,
tooltips as like an affiliated deliverable, where it's helpful for a UX writer whose primary deliverable is going to be UI text.
Yep.
But they're going to be, hopefully they would know enough about support content where they can adhere to like some of the principles behind it, as well as working with that team. And if they're the ones creating the help center content, cool. But it's like knowing what's in the help center. I have a whole other approach, my adapted diataxis novella that gets into some of it. But I'm like, if you think about article typing and the purpose behind articles, and you get really intentional, we can have one article as like a guide about this thing. And that's the thing we always link to. And that URL never changes. So, you know, devs, whoever, doesn't have to go in and keep updating a URL because the article changed. You have a home-based article about something. And then we interlink, and again, that's that idea of progressive disclosure. So we got the UI text that we just saw that we were given.
Yep.
Then I need a little more help, so I'm going to click the tooltip. The tooltip gave me some information, but I think I need a little more still, so I'm going to click on the link that says for more information, check out our Help Center.
Right.
Click on that, and there's an article. I don't have to find the article. It's just there. I'm linked to it. And then maybe that's just like that home base article, that guide article that's giving me like a rundown, like the basics. Like I love a get started article.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this is how you kind of get started on this thing with some basic information on those steps. But then, ooh, actually, I'd like a little more information on this step. Click into a how-to.
Yeah.
And we're following that pathway. I think, was it Dwayne Douglas? He talks about horizontal navigation and exploratory discovery, where it's like you have to understand that people are going to click around. Like the hierarchy in your help center does matter. The layout does matter because people do still browse for things. Your new users don't know the vocabulary of your platform yet. They're going to poke around. Your prospects are going to poke around. I don't know if it's me or because I work with support content or if it's a thing. I think a lot of people do this where it's like if I'm looking between two different products and I'm going to look around their help center a little bit. And if one has a better help center, I'm like, oh, so they're going to invest in supporting me if something goes wrong.
Absolutely.
I think people discount the value of support content that way too. Where it's like it is really important for prospects. There's a really cool Salesforce YouTube series with their...
Ooh.
Don't remember if it was their UX writing team. I think it was just, it might have been their documentation team.
Okay.
I forget. It's like 6 episodes on YouTube, but one of the women in that video, she had gone around a few years ago and just did a survey with their salespeople of like, how often do you refer to the help content? And like Salesforce is a super complex platform. Salesperson shouldn't know all of that. I mean,
yeah.
The number of times from a support perspective where the salesperson told them something, it's from the support perspective when a salesperson told the client something and got them to sign because of this one thing, and then they come to the support team like, where's the thing?
Yep.
Why is it not there? And it's like, well, sales, I don't want to say they made it up, but they definitely didn't fully understand the capabilities of the product.
Yeah.
But they continued to own that knowledge, like they knew it, and then now the client's mad, we're mad, whatever. And I'm over here like, you know, if you have a really strong, robust help center, and this is what Salesforce does, is their salespeople are constantly referring prospects to this. It's like, you know, the salesperson's expertise is sales, as it should be. And then when users or potential users get into those in the weeds questions, you have the amazing resource to send them to.
Yep.
Imagine how that could reduce some friction in the sales process without messing with them once they sign on, and
yeah,
user expectations stay consistent.
Absolutely.
Like this is where it's like it does work and function across all of the teams. And it's even like finance, you wouldn't think, but it's like if you're billing something, which you probably are if you're selling a product or service,
yep,
finance should have eyes on any of your content that talks about billing or whatever with your company. Like it just makes sense.
Yes.
And it doesn't take much. And honestly too, it's like I used to tell my support team, like, work defensively. Even if they don't answer the question, like, send it to them and just be like, hey, we just published this article about the billing stuff. If you can take a look, just let us know if we need to edit anything.
Yeah.
And then you've CYA.
Yeah. Yeah.
If something happens later, it's like, no, I sent this to you. Like, I'm, you know, imagine, you know, they learn from the mistake. If something happens and they're mad, and you're like, no, I sent you this content to review. And they're like, it's wrong. It's like, well, next time, please review it when I ask you. And suddenly you have someone on, like, I don't know. I'm just talking in circles now, theoretically, but like it affects everyone, even if you don't think it does.
Yeah.
Like our IT team, they loved me. I didn't know that at my old job.
Really?
But I was leaving and like at least 2 guys, one of them called me because he was like a week before my last day, and I get this call on Teams and I was like, uh-oh. Or I think he was like, are you available for a call? And I'd done that before with IT. It's like something, I was like, oh no, something's wrong. They need me to test something, whatever.
Right.
So I'm like, oh yeah, sure. And he answers the call and he's like, thank you for like doing the work, for, you know, treating us as humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because IT knows a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And they're honestly your biggest ally when it comes to adopting new platforms and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, should I make that a neater soundbite? Like, that's the point.
I mean, yeah.
Like, working with IT teams even, like, the teams that you might not think you need to work with, like, obviously the IT guy, they set up your computer, they help you get into the platform, whatever. But when it comes to, like, making an argument for better software for your content, that's your biggest ally. when you have someone from IT or someone on finance on your side when those decisions need to get made, and they can help you. Like, if they see, I remember trying to get a QA platform for my team, and I had one of the like just under our CFO take a look at it, and I'm like, I really do think this is helpful. And she was looking at some like the sales calculator math, you know, they like have a little calculator, this is how much it's going to save you if you use our platform. And I'm like, can you just take a look and like help me figure out how I can get but. And she was looking at, she's like, oh yeah, it should save us like 15 grand a year, so at least, or I think it costs 15 grand, but it, like, it made, she was like, it makes sense, like, you know,
it here's evens
how
out.
You can, yeah,
yeah,
she's like, here's how you can maybe present it to the COO and whatever.
Yeah.
And the IT guy, when we were moving platforms, like really trying to understand what they were doing and making it clear that, like, we are on the same team no matter what function within your organization. Like, it can feel like you're coming up against walls, like everyone's trying to do the same thing, we're all trying to sell a product or service, and what, why do those exist? It's to help solve a problem. So really, we're all on the same team to help users solve a problem. Sales is trying to help people find a solution that will solve that problem. You know, it goes all the way around. And so
Absolutely. That's
something where it's like the silos thing, like, this is where I'm like on my little hill about support content, and it felt risky when I was first talking about it, where I'm like, creating another silo, is that a problem? And it's like, you know, silos aren't the problem. It's people.
Yes.
People are the problem who don't want to cross silos. And it's like, we need to find a better, I was looking into it once. I was like, I like the idea of like spokes on a wheel, maybe, but just like something about like how it's like, we're all trying to do the same thing. We just have our own expertise, and we need to respect the fact that like other people also have their expertise in trying to meet that goal. I mean, my God, with AI and chatbots and trying to talk to developers about things, and the content people are irritated with the developers, and the developers are irritated with the content people, because we're all talking about the same stuff with different words, because we've all learned about it in a different way. We've all seen our thought leaders, but they're different, and we're all under the same pressure to get things done. But then it's just like these collisions of,
yeah,
like you're causing me more work, or it is interesting where it's just like, if we could all just get in a room and have more, like, I don't know.
I think that's why LavaCon is so important.
Yeah.
Because
honestly,
we literally are getting in a room and talking through some of these things and having more perspectives. And I think that from what I've seen, you know, people go home and they're energized and they're ready to start, you know, building allies and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's definitely, I like coming to conferences too. I'm like, okay, this is my reminder and my motivator that I need to get my stuff published.
Yeah,
maybe the Help Center helper will come along at some point.
Yes, please let us know when
it
does.
That's the goal. And it's like, you know, the work I do is definitely like small, medium-sized companies who have access to CMS for the very first time. So it's like they're going from that long list of horrible marketing FAQs to like something structured, something searchable, something that is more understandable for users. And so like, I'm not over here doing anything as complex and cool as Heretto or some of these other companies, but at the same time, like, the principles of good content still apply. Like, we're all still working with people in the workplace. Doesn't matter how big you are.
Yeah.
Like, we're all still trying to deliver content that makes sense to our users. We're all trying to hit that golden ratio of like, what is it? Like, at the right content at the right time, at the right place, to the right person. Like, we're all trying to do that. And a lot of the problems we have, like, they feel different for sure. Scale makes a difference, but like, it's the same stuff. People are people. This is all people issues. And just like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're all pretty much the same.
Yeah. We always come back to that.
Like, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. And I hope you have a phenomenal rest of your LavaCon.
Yeah. We're making it through day two.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Welcome to Behind the Docs. We have a very special recording right now because Sarah Feldman has decided that she wants to ask me some questions.
That's right. Ren, when I was reflecting on our conversation, I thought about how your curiosity is driving some really interesting conversations here. And I got curious about you and your point of view. So I have a couple questions for you.
Shoot.
The first one is, when you reflect back on the conversations you've had with folks at the conference here, what are some themes and highlights that stand out to you?
Number one for me is always like, I'm always going to go to the people and like the connection of it, because that's what fuels me. And I get a lot of validation in that feeling when I'm here. So everyone talks about how wonderful it is to like be in the community, to like really be talking about the same things because they feel so isolated outside of LavaCon or outside of the conference, and there aren't as many conferences to do this anymore, like with STC gone and that kind of stuff, and they're really craving a community and a connection. So that's a big one that we talk about a lot. But I think the other one is how I've had a lot of people realize, like, even though AI has been around for a minute and it's been the hot topic, for whatever reason, this one, it feels like people are finally starting to connect, like, oh, I have some real power when it comes to AI, because like I'm writing the content that's going to fuel it for my company. And I think that connection was really understood. And so people feel maybe slightly empowered now because they have a better understanding of how they can directly contribute to AI, and their companies are really excited about that. And so they're maybe getting a little bit more visibility, that kind of stuff.
Neat.
Yeah.
And what are some challenges that folks in this community still need to overcome to realize what you just talked about?
They've got to learn how to communicate that to their executives, to be able to take the connection that they inherently know is there and turn that into business value, and to be able to present that to the people above them, or, you know, laterally, whatever, whoever they need to. But I think that the personalities, it's interesting because everyone talks, a lot of people talk to me about the fact that the personalities here are not very outgoing, in terms of like, they're not going to be the ones to raise their hand at a like company-wide meeting, that kind of stuff. But everyone is so different here. And I'm like, I think everyone needs to learn how to take their like LavaCon personality and put it into like the daily work day, because I think they could raise their hand a lot more than they are willing to right now.
Oh, I love that as advice of taking the energy from LavaCon, taking your LavaCon self back to work and really letting that be your point of view in your company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Take that passion back and let it shine.
Amazing. My final question for you is more about how you ask questions. You ask very insightful and interesting questions. You're great at getting people to share what's on their mind. So I'm curious about your thought process about how you construct good questions, because of course, asking good questions is, it's an important skill set all of its own in this industry.
Yeah, I think it's actually something that very early on connected me when I came into the industry, and I was like, oh, I have no idea what I'm doing here. Like, I stepped in from food tech, like a completely separate space. And I was like, what have I got myself into? The people talking about being able to ask questions and synthesize information, I was like, oh, I do that. Okay, cool. But it comes from, I originally went to school to be a journalist. I wanted to be a radio journalist, and PR was my dream. And so I think that's always ingrained in me. It's something I really love to do. And not only was I trained to do it, but I think I just have a natural curiosity. I just want to know about people. And I really love, I love connecting with other humans, and that nothing fills my cup more. Like, yeah, a day at LavaCon is very, very draining, but I'm laying there in bed and my cup is so full because I've got to speak to so many of my friends and make new friends and learn about them. And I mean, I genuinely just want to know what drives people and what makes them happy and what makes them sad. And so I think that I approach every conversation with that natural curiosity and no judgment. And I just want to get to the bottom of where people are at. And then from there decide, can I help, you know, and can I help create some change in their world? And so that's a lot of I like the conversations because they get my brain going as well. And I think that it's been really fun to talk to people here because they're so different from me, but also very, very similar. Like, coming from a marketing background, you know, we talk about content in very, very different ways. And so it's fun to dig in and learn and see what they're talking about. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, sometimes people start going off about what they're really passionate about and I get lost. And I think my eyes like literally glaze over and I really try to figure it out, but it always creates a, like, I can always find a question because there's always something else to learn.
My follow-up question related to your lovely answer is, based on the fact that cross-functional collaboration is going to be so essential for change makers among LavaCon folks to get these things done in their organizations. And I think asking good questions can be a key to propelling that along. So how would you advise listeners to be good question askers in their organizations based off of your experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the way that I would approach it is, and the way that I often do approach it is, I just ask if I can like sit in on the big meetings. Like, and obviously you're not going to sit in on like the leadership business calls and stuff. But like, for instance, I just didn't really have a good grasp on what was going on in product. And so I was like, hey, can, like, I saw you do a biweekly product review. Can I sit in on that? Like, can I, like, I won't interject or anything, but I just love to know what's going on and just learn. And so then as I started to learn more about what was going on in product, then I could form some really good questions, right? Then I had a little bit more information and can come to people with excitement. And I think that's always something that people forget, is like, if you come to someone with an idea that's going to help them in some way, like with product, for instance, I can say, hey, I really love this new thing that we're building. I want to make it huge. Like, I want to do a big release from it. How can I help you make that happen? And I get it. Not like, not everyone has the capacity in their job, but if you do, that's a great way to start making those friends. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, make a friend, like find a new person and just connect with them on a human level. And then you can start to get involved. But a lot of times it really is just asking them about what they're doing day to day. And if there's anything that, like, if you're a technical writer, like your whole job is to, well, I mean, not your whole job. I know we do a lot. but like, you are so well designed to approach a person, learn about a process, and then find a place where there may be improvement, right? Because like, if you were writing the documentation on their process, what would you want to fill the gap? How would you do that, et cetera?
Totally.
So like, the people in your organization are your product. Go learn about them and then like document in your own head what's going on in their world. Ooh. And then fill those gaps and start to use your expertise in their area. And I think that that's also a great way to say, I like, this is what I do day to day. This is how I can help. Like, and people will start to gravitate to that, I think.
That is great advice.
If it doesn't work, don't blame me.
Is that the mic drop at the end?
That's the end of the episode. It's just going to end with, if it doesn't work, don't blame me.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Docs, where the content's structured, but the conversations aren't. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with someone who loves great documentation as much as we do. Until next time, keep creating content that makes a difference.